recording. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for coming. This week, I hope to wrap up the general topic of Psak and Halacha. I just want to kind of show you two of the books that I've been using for Makoros for it. One, this is by Rabbi Natano Wiederblank. He's one of the younger Rebbeim in YU. He gives Halacha and Gemara Shiurim, but his area of expertise is Jewish philosophy, Hashgafa. His name is Rabbi Natano Wiederblank. He lives in Passaic now. He's originally from Silver Spring. So he gives the seminar course in Jewish philosophy for the Smicha students. He's published two books. It's out of a series of three. Covers the major concepts in Jewish philosophy. So he talks about Psak in Hashkafa, which I used a lot of the sources from there. And the other, this, is from Rabbi Moshe Meiselman from Eretz Yisrael, one of the Talmidim of the Rav, I would say on the more Haredi spectrum, put it mildly. But I think he evolved over time also.
You mean he developed?
Yes. Okay. Right. Right. We don't say the word evolve, but yeah. No. There was a sort of progression of his own personal views, but he is a Talmud of the Rav, and without getting into all of the nuances of the inferences that he makes, I do think. I'm sorry.
No.
Oh.
I know a family in Brookline, Meiselman.
Yeah, well, they're all related. I think, right?
They were related to the Rav too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so the Rav was his uncle, I believe.
Sometimes.
So he is, I think, a pretty good expositor in this area of the Rav's views, as we'll see from Rav Schechter as well. I think one of the, I guess, I don't know, tainas, I don't know if tainas is the right word, but people. On the more modern end of the modern Orthodox spectrum, have complaints or tainas on YU's philosophy or the Rosh Yeshiva of YU saying that certain Hashgafic ideas are should be put up to a vote. You don't have to believe certain things. And as we'll see, I think a very big dividing line between those that say that there is Psak and those that say there aren't, at least in the modern Orthodox world, are whether you're a Talmud of the Rav or not. Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Rosenzweig, Rav Schechter, Rabbi Meiselman, if you're a real Talmud of the Rav, you say that there is Psak in Hashkafa because that's what the Rav held. And he said it many times. I'm not going to show you all the makoros, but he did say it many times. And I'm sorry, I don't have this on the computer. But if you take out the first page of your source sheet, this is a letter that Rav Schechter wrote as a michtav bracha for this book, by Rabbi Wiederblank. So he says, "Ha'olam ragilim lechalek bein halacha lebein agada." So the world tends to differentiate between halacha and agada. V'rabbanei Hashem, and rabbis of Hashem, Ragil Lomar, she'en kol kach hevdel, that there really is no difference. She'halacha bo lefaret, ezo asios, asuros, ezo mechuyavos, ve'ezo mutaros, lo asuros v'lo mechuyavos. So, just like by halacha, the function of it is to essentially delineate what's mutter, what's aser, what's obligatory, what's not obligatory. Kimokain b'machshava u'b'hashkafa chelak ha'agada b'sheba Torah. The same thing is true with hashkafa or machshava or agada, whatever you want to call it. Bo'alefaret eza hashkafos mechuyavos ve'eza asuros ve'eza mutaros. So that's exactly the same thing. He does not differentiate. Rav Schechter says that Rabbanei Hashem do not differentiate between halacha and hashkafa. The only difference is one is physical and one is cerebral. But there's absolutely no difference. That is the Rav's position.
He also says this is true of agada.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So he says anything in the Gemara, there is a concept of psak. There is a concept of consensus. And it's no different than halacha. There might be some different rules to it, but there is no, practically speaking, there is no difference. And then he talks about how great of a person Rabbi Wiederblank is. We don't need to read the second half of it right now as part of the shiur. He is a very good person, and it is true. But the point that I wanted to bring out over here is that this position that many of you may have heard from YU rabbinic figures, it's because this is the position of the Rav. As we'll see...
How does the Rav explain Haggadahs that couldn't possibly be realistic?
So Rav Schechter and that school of thought are not saying that you have to believe it literally. What they're saying is that when it comes to theology, there is a concept of a psak. Again, there's different rules. We have to generally take halacha literally. By Agada, many Mefarshim say you don't always have to take it literally, but just because you don't take it literally doesn't mean that whatever the message it's trying to share is not binding. So, for example, if their Gemara is using a metaphor for something, but it's trying to bring out a point, so I don't have to believe that that actually happened, but I do have to believe in whatever message the Gemara is telling me. That's what Rav Schechter and that school of thought would say. What we're going to do this week, and I showed you the first source last week, is to basically show that this is not a Davar Muskim. Even though Rav Schechter says this is the position of Rabbanei Hashem, there were many great Rabbanim that did not subscribe to that throughout history. As we'll see historically, it's typically earlier people, starting with the Gaonim and some Rishonim, some Achronim, but as we move later on in history, it actually becomes less. It's just a trend, but let me share the sheet so we can all see together. Hold on.
Is it really a trend or is it a function of history?
That's not for me to say.
You're trying to pin it down.
If you really want my opinion, this is not an opinion that I've researched. So this is just my gut. Just having seen the sources, my sense is that with the advent of, or with the popularization of Kabbalah and Hasidus, it lends itself to a more absolutist view. And coupled with having to deal with the reform and various secular movements, we've had to take it's been easier to run with a more hard-lined approach to psak.
Absolutely. It's that concept that the prior generations, Katni Begadrus, okay, prior generations were a lot smarter than the current ones, which defeats all kinds of the modern theories.
Yeah, and
that's a trend.
Correct. Yes. I agree. I think that is a trend. But what I want to bring out is that you know, last week we saw Gedolim that also said that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So this is not a new debate. This was always a debate. As we'll see, I think Rashi has one position. The Gaonim have a different position. The Radak has a different position. The Rambam had an interesting position. So this has always been a debate. I'm just saying that that in modern times, more Rabbanim subscribe to the belief that there's Psak, probably for those reasons. So let's start off. So we did this first source last week. We'll just do it again to review. So this is from the Otzer HaGaonim. So just a little bit about the Otzer HaGaonim. The Otzer HaGaonim was not published by the Gaonim. The Otzer HaGaonim, it literally means a treasure trove of Gaonim. It's a couple of scholars in Rabbanim that have culled together works of Gaonim and organized them based on the Masechtos. So some of them might be Svarim that they wrote, some of them might be Tshuvas, some of them might be fragments from a Geniza. And they tell you in the footnotes. So this one, Rav Haigon, Kach Kosav Perech Chagiga. So he apparently wrote some commentary to Chagiga. I don't think we have it. Heve Yodim. Kedivrei Agada Lav Kishmuahim. So Shmua means a teaching, a traditional teaching that was passed down. So he says that's not what Agada is. Ela kol echad doresh masha'ola alibo. People darshan what comes up in their hearts. Kigon efshar as a possibility. V'yesh lomar, or as an option to say. Lo davar chatuch, but not something set in stone that's cut. Lefichach on samchom aleihem. And that's why we had that Gemara in the Yerushalmi that says we don't rely on it. The Od Kasav Ba'osan HaPirushim, and he also wrote in those commentaries, V'hamidrashas halalu lo davar shmuahem v'lo davar halacha ela efshar ba'olam ka'amar v'chi hamidrashas be'efshar ba'olam hu'amrim. So once again, he says this in another place as well, that midrashim and agada are things that people made up. Now again, this could go on a tangent, that do we have to believe that everything in Agada is a tradition or things that people make up using the same rules, just like halacha drashos? I don't want to get into that. Clearly, Rabbeinu Hai is taking a side in that debate. But what Rav Hai, for our purposes, is saying is that because this is not a tradition, but rather it's something that somebody's making up, and again, it's not to belittle it. We all make drashos, and you know, the great Gedolim of thousands of years ago were much better and much more attuned to the Torah than we are. So that's why we still study theirs, and we don't read every rabbi's drashas, you know, every week. And you know, not all of them are published, and not all of them are canonized.
When you use the phrase "made up," that means without any imaginative reference in the Torah that would support his imaginative effort?
Well, so I mean, to be clear, it doesn't mean that, like, just, you know, it was yesh me'ay and that something came out of nothing. Like, right. If you look at halachic drashos, for example, so they pick up on textual nuances, either problems or certain emphases, and they try to explain, well, why is the Torah written that way? Why is it emphasizing it? So if you open up, say, like a Medrash Rabbah, so it'll often start off with a line from the Torah, and the Mefarshim will say, okay, they were bothered by this, or they're trying to explain this. Now, sometimes it's very obvious where they came from, and sometimes you're like, okay, I see that problem, but wow, where did you get this from? Right. So the answer is that nobody makes something up out of nowhere. Either it comes from a previous generation, or it comes from trying to explain a certain nuance that they're embellishing either on their own or from some previous work. There was a Talmud of the Chazon Ish, who at some point I would like to teach his stuff. I just don't want to be labeled a kofer. His name was Rav Gedalia Nadel. So he was a big Talmud Chacham and a member of the Haredi world. At the same time, he also taught students in of the Dati Lumi world as well. So what's his name? The guy who from Male Adumim who publishes Rambam, Rav Shilat. So he published some of the talks that Rav Gedalia Nadel gave to his Chabura. So in his Chabura of some Dati Lumi Rabbanim, Rav Nadel was a big Rambam guy, and so he tried to explain from a rationalist perspective almost, or a Mora Nevuchim type of perspective, Parshas Bereishis and Parshas Noach. So you can kind of guess where that goes by saying not to take many psukim literally. And the Haredi world was not very happy about it. Now, you can't put Rav Gedalia Nadel in Chayrim. You can't do that, especially after he's dead. But you can put that book in Chayrim. You can say that, no, that's not his real stuff. So in that footnote, at the beginning of the book, he has a footnote where he says, you know, I showed these to him. These were transcripts. I showed them to him. He approved them. Nobody says you have to read them. No one says you have to learn them. But don't make fun of them. Don't knock them. In addition to that, though, there's two essays about philosophy of drashos, even in halacha. And you can see that in his Chumash Shiurim as well, where he says that, like, drashos are used to either bring out a moral point or to use your own intellect to try to resolve a textual issue by embellishing. And he shows that in halacha and in agada. So that's where I'm coming from when I say that it's not completely out of nowhere. what Rav Chaya is saying is that there's no Kabbalah, there's no tradition that goes back to Moshe from Har Sinai, and because of that, I don't have to follow it. Meaning, he's not saying that Agada, that we don't care about theology, that theology isn't binding. It's just that this theology doesn't have a tradition going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's whatever this Tana or Amora thought was the right pshat. So maybe he's right, maybe he's not. But that doesn't have to force me to believe it because it doesn't go back to Moshe. That's his point. And we have a similar idea in source number 2. So this is a quotation from a work called Mevo HaTalmud. It's an introduction to Gemara. It's not super long. It's sort of like a beginner's guide to explaining terms and concepts in Gemara. It was written by Rav Shmuel Hanagid. So Rav Shmuel Hanagid was a very interesting person. He lived, I would say, in like the 10th century, maybe? No, probably like 11th century in Spain. And Hanagid means leader or general. So in addition to being a Talmud Chacham, he was also a political leader in the Muslim court there. He was a general. Whether he actually saw battle or not is a debate amongst historians, but he was certainly a field, he was certainly a commander. And in peace times, he was a political leader. He had a son who continued, but his son was killed off. He was really one of the first and only ones to wield such significant power. There was one other person, Chasdai ibn Shaprut, but he wasn't as much of a Torah scholar. He was more of just like a political leader. But Rav Shmuel Hanagid was also a Talmud Chacham, so he wrote this manual. What historians and scholars have noted is that this is eerily similar to other accounts written by Rav Shirira Gaon. This what we're going to read right now. And so they think that Rav Shmuel Hanagid basically copied and pasted. You know, there wasn't really a concept of plagiarism back then because you didn't have mass production of publishing. When you saw something you liked, you put it in. You copied it so other people could see it. So this idea is also attributed in other Svarim to Rav Shirira Gaon, and so it's pretty clear that it is. So it's not only a Rishon that's saying this. This is one of the Gaonim as well. So he says, V'hagadahu. So Agada is kol pirish sheyavo b'talmud, even something that's in the Gemara al shum inyan on any topic shelo yia mitzvah that does not have to do with a mitzvah. So that's how he defines Agada. Anything that is a pirish, meaning any biblical interpretation that does not have to do with halacha, is called Agada. And the only thing you need to accept from there is if it makes sense. Again, not if you take it literally, because some things aren't meant to be taken literally, but it has to make sense. It
has to be reasonable, like in Israel.
Exactly. So this is the reasonableness clause of Rav Shmuel Hanagid. V'yesh lecha ledas shekol ma shekaymu chazal halacha b'inyan mitzvah shehimi pi Moshe Rabbeinu olav hashalom shekibo mipi hagvura ein lecha lehosef olav v'lo legroa mimenu. So this is going to come up in Dvarim in a few weeks, the Isser of Baal Tosef and Baal Tigra, to add or detract. So he says, you know, we clearly see that Agada, people add stuff every generation, so how could that be? That's Baal Tosef, that's Baal Tigra. He says, because that stuff wasn't given by Moshe, so it's not binding, because then that would be Baal Tosef or Baal Tigra. It's a separate thing. Anything that comes from halacha comes from Moshe from Hashem. Anything that's not halacha comes from various generations. Avol Masha Pirshu Bapsukim Kol Echad Kfi Masha Nizdamein Lo Umasha Ra Bidaito Ulefi Masha Yala Aladas Mine Perushim Ha'elu Lomdim Osam Vasharin Somchim Aleim. So he says, when you see a commentary in Chumash, whether it be in the Gemara, whether it be later, he says, if it makes sense, great. And if it doesn't make sense, we're not bothered by it. We just put it aside. That's the opinion of at least two Gaonim and one Rishon. However, there were others that argue. In addition to what we saw last week, take a look at Sefer at source number 3. This is a Rashi. So Rashi in Parshas Pinchas, it's talking about various historical stuff about how to explain the Shvatim, you know, where the was one of the wives pregnant when they got into Mitzrayim. So Rashi says, V'im agadahi hare tov. So if this pirush about one of the imos being pregnant when they went, or one of the wives being pregnant when they went to Mitzrayim, it's good. V'imlav, but if not, ani omer, I'm going to say something else. So what does that mean? If you look in source number 4, the Sifsei Chachamim there explains, and again, I think it's pretty clear, Kolomer, im Rav Moshe Hadarshan, that's the one who quoted this, Matzah Tam Zeh B'Sefer Agada, if he found it in a Sefer Agada, Hare Tov, that's good. V'eini Rashai Lach Lo Kalav, and I'm not allowed to argue with it. V'imlav, but if not, Kolomer, v'im Taima D'Nashe Kamer, if he's just making something up, Omer Ani Gam Ken Tam Achar Me'atzmi, so I'll say something else too, I'll make something up too. So Rashi's approach is that there's a distinction between what we would call rabbinic literature and post-rabbinic literature. According to Rashi, if it's something that Chazal said in a Gemara or in a Medrash, so I have to accept it. Now, that's not to say it's Pashut Pshat, because Rashi will sometimes give his own Pashut Pshat in addition to a Medrash, but Rashi says, if it's a Medrash, I have to accept it on some level. If Rav Moshe Hadarshan's making it up, so okay, I don't care, I'm going to make up my own thing. However, the Radak disagrees. If this is just one example, there are many times. This is in Yehoshua. So there's a Gemara that says that when the Jewish people were camped out by Ai, so there's this figure that comes out with a sword. Turns out he's a Malach, and Yehoshua and the Malach have a whole conversation. So the Malach says, Atabasi, now I've come. So the Gemara launches into a whole explanation about how the Jews didn't bring weren't bringing karbanos and they weren't learning, and it was really the lack of learning that the Malach and Hashem were upset about. The Radak just goes to town. If I didn't translate it, just because you know we don't need just to conserve a little bit of space. If you just look at the bolded parts, he says v'zeh drash rachuk. This drash is really far out. I mean, that's basically how you translate it. It's far out. And then he proves how, like, you know, it doesn't make sense. He says people don't learn during wartime. Now, I do have to say, I have a friend in Hezder who he had a person in his unit that he would learn Menchas Chinuch in between shifts in the army. Now, there wasn't an active military campaign; they weren't on the battlefront, but they were in barracks, and this was active duty. And he still learned Menchas Chinuch. So. With all respect to the Radak, it is possible. Second of all, but if you look in the next line, he says, "Va'od ki kosev hadrash hazek tov ba'pasuk." So it's not a shear on Yehoshua. It's not a shear in Yehoshua, but he basically says, like, he's misread the psukim. Like, you know, he's combining a pasuk from two psukim later and bringing it over here. That's talking about something else. So again, he's not afraid to go to town with non-halachic midrashim. This is a Gemara, and he doesn't care. This Gemara is not halachic, it's an agada. So again, just clearly, there are different opinions. We have Rashi, we have the Radak, we have the Gaonim. This has been a debate. What would you say is the reason for this debate? Meaning, whenever we have a halachic machlokas, we try to zero in on the nekudas hamachlokas, the point of contention. Why are they arguing? So right now we have two schools of thought. One says that there is a concept of psak. There is some sense of authoritativeness to hashkafa, and others say there isn't. Why would there be a debate about this? And there's no right answer. I'm going to suggest one, but I don't think there is a right answer, but I'm just curious. What do you mean? Meaning, so you say that even though we're only talking about hashkafa, maybe there's something that we can take out of it that's still practical. So that will be similar to the Rambam's position. We'll get to that hopefully in the second part of the shiur. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Any other suggestions? So this is one that I saw. Rabbi Wiederblank is the one that suggests it. He has what you would call a chakira. You know, we have this in halacha, where we can look at something in one of two ways, or one of many ways. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that people usually assume that there's only two sides to a debate in halacha. He says, there's as many sides as you need. But over here, you can really explain what psak is in two ways. And this is really where it goes back to the discussion we had 2 weeks ago about the nature of psak, which is psak meant to be something that's practical or formal, or is it an absolute truth unto itself? Meaning, when we say a psak, are we just saying, oh yeah, I think this is the truth? Or, I'm not saying this is the truth, but I'm dictating policy now. And the nafkamina, or the difference between those, is, well, what happens if there isn't anything practical about it? What happens if there is no, what I would say, halacha lemaisa nafkamina? Let's take a look. If you look source number six. So this is the Hakdama to the Rambam's Yad HaChazaka. So the Rambam, in the introduction, he says, Avol kol hadvarim shebegemara habavli chayavin kol Yisrael alachas bahem. Everything in the Talmud Bavli is incumbent on all Jews. We force them to do it wherever they are around the world. Why? Ho'il v'chol osam hadvarim shebegemara hiskimu aleim kol Yisrael. So the reason why the Gemara is binding is because all the Jewish people accepted it on themselves. According to the Rambam, the nature of psak is what? It's just acceptance. It doesn't mean that they're right. It doesn't mean that when we paskin like something, the opinion we're paskining like is the true position. We have this concept in halacha, elu ve'elu divrei elukim chayim, or the famous story of the tanner of Achnai, the oven of Achnai, where we say, lo bashamayim, he is not up in heaven, even though heaven's saying, this guy's right. The other chachamim say, we don't care because we disagree. Those chachamim may be wrong, and yet we still have to follow them. So what the Rambam is saying is that the reason why the Gemara and Halacha is binding is not because it's true, but because Klal Yisrael accepted it. So if that's the case, then maybe where we don't accept something practically, maybe we shouldn't be forced to take sides. Maybe we shouldn't have to say that we paskin every hashkafik machlokas because it doesn't really matter. If we don't accept something, so it shouldn't impact me. And that's really what Rav Hirsch wants to argue. If you look in source number 7, this is a translation of his introduction to Chorev. So he says there's two areas of halacha. There's halacha and agada. There's two areas of Torah, halacha and agada. So he says, and its knowledge, the second one, will be derived almost exclusively from the tradition which transmits the oral and written divine utterances and the regulations of the sages. So that's halacha. The other school will concern itself with reflecting and pondering on these laws, and its source of knowledge will be the more or less illuminating power of insight, which dwells in each individual religious thinker. The work of the first school lies before us in the Shmaitisa, Shmua, Halacha, teaching, made up of things heard. The work of the second we find in the Agadata, made up of the ideas which have occurred to each one, of what each one has related, or Lehagid. Everything belonging to the first school is obligatory because it emanates from the authority which has power to bind. All that springs from the second school has no power to bind because it represents only the views of individuals and can claim recognition only insofar as it is in conformity with what is contained in the work of the first school. Meaning we can't have a machlokes between halacha and agada. He says that's not going to fly. But as long as it doesn't contradict, so there's no power to bind us to believe that, because it's just an individual. It's not Klal Yisrael, or quote-unquote, the rabbis, or what Rav Shechter would call Rabbanei Hashem. Rav Hirsch would disagree with that. The work of the first school, from the very nature of its contents, came to an end with the completion of the Gemara, the collection of the Shmaitisa. The production of Agadita is, however, free and capable of enlargement at all times. So that idea is basically Rav Hirsch saying that the nature of psak is about practical binding, that it serves a specific function. And if it has nothing to do with that function, then there's no concept of psak. So that really, I think, works with that Rambam that we just read. If you go back 2 weeks ago to the Rambam that described Hora'as Beis Din as being a very formalized they can't even say it amongst themselves that the halacha is that way. They need to like hang it on a plaque outside. They need to release their statement or release their decision to the masses. That's because psak to the Rambam is a very formalized entity that may not even have to reflect Torah truth. It has to reflect what Chazal have decided policy is.
That makes life interesting. Hirsch, writing when he wrote, which is 19th century Germany, is saying here you have a very fixed halakha l'maisa.
Yes.
It's not changeable.
Right. Yeah, Rav Hirsch says that you cannot change halach, and you're 100% right. He's writing this to combat the reform, that you cannot argue with Gemara. You cannot argue with halacha. Agada, you have free reign. So you can translate psukim differently, but you can't change halacha.
Hirsch then had, and that was what he's saying, Hirsch then had a terrible time arguing about machlokas. What is machlokas? If halacha of Mises is fixed, if the Gemara is fixed, it should be no machlokas.
It should be, right?
So, you're right. I mean, if there shouldn't be any, if halacha is fixed, how could you have machlokas? Yeah, it's a good point. You'd have to say that even though we don't argue with the Gemara, we're arguing about what the Gemara means. You know, that's what you have to say.
What does that change?
What do you mean? What is that meaning? It means I can't say the Gemara is wrong.
No, you're arguing what the Gemara means, which is meaning you have a machlokas.
It means we have a machlokas about what the Gemara means. It means I can't say that I don't like what Ravina Narvashi said. Meaning that's where he's coming from. I mean, if you read the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, in Hilchos Mamrim rather, the Rambam says that theoretically speaking, if it's about a drasha, I can't argue with a halacha l'moshe misina, but if it's about a drasha, I could theoretically disagree with a Tana and say, I want to darshan the psukim differently. That being said, we don't do that. Why not? Because the Kesef Mishnah says this, Rav Chaim Wasserman says this, there's a Tosfos that says this. Basically, we've accepted upon ourselves, and the Rambam says this in that introduction, we've accepted on ourselves not to argue, and that's binding for all perpetuity. But just because it means I can't disagree with that generation doesn't mean I can't disagree about what that generation meant. So that's, I would assume, where he would have to go. But it's a good point. Okay. So that's, I would say, the Gaonic and Rambam school of thought. But what about Rashi? What about the Rav? What about all those people? So what would you say then? So I think, and Rav Twersky, the Rav's grandson, often explained that reaching a conclusion in Torah is halacha l'maisa. Reaching a conclusion in Torah itself of understanding the truth is a practical application. And that's sort of the rationale for saying that there's psak in hashgafa. Let me read you his language here. I wasn't able to photocopy it onto the sheet, but let me open it up here. He says, it is valuable, even if there was no normative application, even as we acknowledge legitimacy in both views in any Talmudic dispute, we must attempt to figure out which view is more correct. According to this position, we indeed issue rulings on matters with no practical relevance because that constitutes halacha l'maisa. Again, you could disagree with that position. That's how Rav Twersky wants to explain how even non-practical matters, i.e. hashkafa, because you're trying to reach the Amita Shel Torah, that is a practical implication unto itself. So that's I would say, the two positions. Rav Kook has a fascinating idea, and people disagree with it. But Rav Kook has a fascinating idea based on the Chovos HaLevavos. So if you look in source number 8, this is a pasuk from Parsha Shoftim. So the pasuk is talking about Zakein Mamre, talking about when you have a rebellious sage. But before that, it describes sort of the appeals process. Ki yipale mimcha davar lamishpat, if it will fall before you a matter of judgment, Bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, hu bein nega lenega, divrei rivos b'sha'arecha. So we have dam, we have questions about blood, we have questions about din, We have questions about a nega, and you have divrei rivos, and you have fighting. So those are all different areas of halacha. We also have the word davar, which is a matter or a thing. So those are all different categories. So what are you supposed to do if, you know, you have a fight in your gates where the judges sit? You should go up to the Beis HaMikdash, the place where Hashem chooses, and that's where the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin HaGadol, will be. Look at the Chovas HaLevavos on the next page. It's in the photocopied section. So he says, Dibir HaKasuv, Ki pale mimcha davar lamishpat, ubasa el hakohanim, v'asisa al pia davar asher yagidu lecha, you have to follow what they say. V'ka'asher tisbonein, when you look at that list of what the pasuk included, timtza she'elos hatzrichos chiluk v'hagdara b'derech hakabbalah lo b'derech halimud hasichli. All of those things require a tradition or a mesora, basically, to answer, and do not rely on your own individual, like, you know, your own intuition or your own inspiration ideas. So Hanach Roa Shelo Hisker Bichlal Inyan Min Hanyanim Hanisagim Baseichel, because it doesn't mention just like philosophy ideas. Lefi Shelo Amar in this pact beInyan Hayichud Heichu, it doesn't say if you have a question about God's unity, like if you have a theological question, Ubishemos Habore Utaarav, or like the different names of God or how He's described. Like these are things that we know that people in the Gemara were bothered by. Like if you look. Like, the Gemara talks about all these things. The Gemara talks about Yichud Hashem. The Gemara talks about Shemos of Hashem. Kabbalistic literature of that time dealt with that. Nevi'im dealt with that. Psukim dealt with that. But this pasuk doesn't say to go to ask about it. Ubi yisod mi yisodos hadas. It doesn't talk about fundamentals of the religion. Shetisboch bohem al ziknei chachmei hadas v'tishan al mesores kabbalasam bilvad. It doesn't say that you're supposed to just blindly follow whatever the elders tell you in those areas. Ela Amar, Pinei, Eltis Bonatcha, turn to your own understanding. V'hishtamesh b'sichlecha, v'chol hadoma lezeh, and think about in your own mind whatever comes to it. Achashatamar aleh mitzad ha-kabbalah, kol eles es kol mitzvos hadas. You know, obviously you should take in the tradition, but you're the final arbiter of what you ultimately believe. Basically, investigate them, find the truth, and then throw away everything else. So the Chovas HaLevavos is saying this pasuk only lists halachic stuff. It doesn't list hashgafic stuff. It doesn't list theology. And so I don't care about that. I just don't care. You have to use your own mind. Halacha requires a tradition. It requires specialized knowledge. The other stuff I could just use my own knowledge for. I have to be smart. Again, he's not saying everybody can do this, but he's saying you shouldn't be bound by what a formalized body tells you to believe. So obviously many people disagree with this. As we'll see, even the Rambam would disagree with this. But Rav Kook actually believed that this was a machlokes between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. If you look right to the left of this, you'll see the Yerushalmi and the Bavli in sources number 10 and 11. So in source number 10, it says the pasuk, Ki pale mimcha davar, right, that pasuk. So what does it say? Davar means agada. Now look at the Bavli, one down, davar zu halacha. So What's the Chovas HaLevavos paskening like? The Bavli. So the Chovas HaLevavos is paskening like the Bavli and not like the Yerushalmi. So Rav Kook wants to say, now again, if you actually read the Chovas HaLevavos, it's probably not accurate to say that this is what the Chovas HaLevavos actually believes. This is probably just what Rav Kook believed, which is in itself worth studying. Rav Kook thinks that this is a broader debate about the Derech HaLimud of the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Netziv, and again, he was a student of the Netziv, so the Netziv wrote a commentary on the She'iltos called Hemek Sheila, and in the introduction, he has basically a whole book about sort of, or a very long essay about the history and the mechanics of Torah Shebaal Peh. My sister, who was in Israel for the summer, it's very hard to find. They published a really nice version of just that. She picked it up for me, so now hopefully at some point I can teach it. But he has this idea that he says, if you compare the Bavli and Yerushalmi, it's not just that the Yerushalmi is not as finished. Like, that's very obvious, that the Yerushalmi was not a finished work like the Bavli is. But he says even their method of analysis is very different than the Bavli. And just as a point, he says, whenever we have a proof in the Bavli, it's called Ta Shema, come in here. In the Yerushalmi, what's that analog? Ta Chazi, come and see. It means the same thing, but it's a different word. And Rav Kook says that's actually symptomatic of different approaches to learning. Shema means it's at a distance. I need to hear it. I need a tradition. I need to hash it out. I need to be more analytical. For the Yerushalmi, it's much more terse. It's just come and see. I don't need to describe anything if I have it right in front of my face, because I could just see it. So the Yerushalmi, he says, learning in Israel, the process of Torah Shebaal Peh in Israel was very different. It was a much more, you could say, I don't know if intuitive is the right word, but a much more intimate, much more visceral type of learning than the analytical learning in Bavel. Rav Kook takes a more Kabbalistic tone or look at that distinction, but it's really the same idea. If you look in source number 12, he says, "Deseder limud shehu nismach al sharshei hanavua usi'ifeha." So a mechanism or a framework of learning that rests on the foundations of prophecy and its descendants like Ruach HaKodesh, ha'halachos im ha'agados is misachtos al yada. So with that type of learning, halacha and hashkafa are really just one big piece. V'yesh inyone kabbalah umesores b'deos kamo b'masim. So in that type of learning, when it comes based on traditions and revelations, so yeah, then there's just as much gravitas to halacha that there is hashkafa, because it's all the same thing. Vizosi dasa Yerushalmi shelo kedivrei chovos halavavos, and that's the position of the Yerushalmi, unlike the chovos halavavos. Avol b'seder limud shebechutz la'aretz shebechul she'ena ru'uya l'nevuah, but in chutz la'aretz they didn't have nevuah. Umemela ein anfei ruach hakodesh mislachtim ima halacha unsucheha. So ruach hakodesh and whatever divine spirit the Yerushalmi people had, the Bavli didn't have that, so hashkafa was not unified with the halachic approach. Hadeos heinuch rak ma she'efshar lahotzi mitoch haseichel hegyoni. It's agada in the Talmud Bavli or anything that came from chutz la'aretz. It's nice, but it's only what came out of a mortal mind. There's nothing special about it, so it just has to make sense. Ve'ein l'inyanei hagadol shaychus lahalacha. There's no prohibition of ignoring some agadic teaching in the Bavli, because there's nothing special about it. If it would be from the Yerushalmi, also then that would be something else. Because there's a certain spiritual tradition. And then he says, that's the difference in general between the approaches of learning in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. I didn't include this, but then he ends off saying, Emirtz Hashem, when Mashiach comes and Eretz Yisrael is rebuilt and we have Torah's Eretz Yisrael, then that will change. And Hashkafa will become binding again as we reinvigorate that style of learning. But what's very, very clear is that Rav Kook believed that that there are two schools of thought, and it's not just that there are two schools of thought, there really is legitimacy to both schools of thought. It depends on the nature of how these hashkafos are being derived. It doesn't mean that the Yerushalmi thinks it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu, but the halachic process and the hashkafic process are one in the same, and they're just as binding, as opposed to by Agada, where there was just inevitable shift that occurred because the process of learning was different. So that's another school of thought. Yeah?
Is that why in the Hagdama Liyad HaPasak in number 6, the Rambam says, Allah called the Lord should be Gemara Abavri?
Yes.
The exclusion of the...
Yes, so the Rambam... Yes, exactly. So the Rambam said that we accept the Bavli and not the Yerushalmi. Probably, again, the Rambam would say, well, because we did. Because historically we accepted the Bavli. You know, if you look around, that's just what happened. If you want to come from a more meta perspective, it was that, you know, the academies in Eretz Yisrael, because of Byzantine persecution, basically just dissolved. Like, they couldn't exist. And eventually, things were transferred over to Bavel. Some people want to argue that it also went to Europe straight from Eretz Yisrael. That's a huge debate among scholars. I'm not going to get into that. into New York. But the Bavli is clearly a more hashed out work, and subsequent Jewish traditions overwhelmingly favored the Bavli. Because the power of the Gaonim was so strong. Meaning Eretz Yisrael, historians say, like, had their own Gaonim. Like, there were Gaonim in Eretz Yisrael. They also became much more experts in Diktuk and the text of the Torah and Tanakh. And some of their Minhagim spilled over to, like, Greece and other areas of Asia Minor and Eastern Europe before it was taken over. But the Gaonim really held monopoly in the rest of the Middle East, in Northern Africa, in Spain, and then France. And then the question is, so where did Ashkenaz come from? So it predominantly came somewhat from the Gaonim via Spain. Some of it came from Italy. And so the question is, well, where did Italy come from? So we know some of Italy came from Gaonim. Some of it may have come from Greece, which may have come from Eretz Yisrael. So Ashkenaz is a little bit trickier to piece together, but just overwhelmingly we've adopted the Gaonim and the Bavli. So we only have 10 minutes left, so I don't think we'll finish this. But we'll do a little bit of the Rambam just to kind of show you what the Rambam's position is. If you turn the page, so comes from Maseches Sota. Some of you may have done this in Daf Yomi a few months ago. So the Gemara in Sota is talking about the process of giving the Sota water to the accused woman. And so the Mishnah says she's given the water to drink and then she blows up. But maybe some things could save her or at least push off the death if she had certain merits like learning or supporting Torah. So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ein Zuchus Tola B'mayim Hamarim, that no merits will save her from the waters, doesn't matter what zuchusim she did, if she's guilty of adultery, she blows up. Rabbi Omer, HaZuchus Tola B'mayim Hamarim, that no, certain merits of Torah can. Ultimately, what Rabbi says is that, you know, she deteriorates slowly over time, over a period of like 1 to 3 years, but she doesn't die instantaneously. So what does the Rambam say? In source number 15, the Rambam says, Ukvar amarti lecha lo pam. I've said this more than once. She'em nechleku chachamim be'eza hashkafa videya, she'en tachlisa ma'asim min hama'asim. Harei ein lomar sham halacha keploni. So if the sages debate anything, and we'll use this translation over here, this comes from the Kapach edition, hashkafa videya. So what would you translate as hashkafa videya? Theology. So that's the way Rav Kapach translates it from the Arabic. She'ein tachlisa ma'asem min hamaisim. That there's no practical purpose or conclusion that needs to be derived from that debate. Hare ein lo marsham halacha kiploni. We don't say that the halacha follows a certain opinion. So if we would just take this translation of the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnah, what would we say? Is there psak in Hashkafa?
Absolutely not.
So I would say it depends. If there's a practical implication, so then there could be. If there is no practical implication, then not. So here, the Rambam's saying there's no practical implication. This was just a historical thing. You know, I'm not a history book, so I don't have to care. Like, okay, this was a debate. They weren't there, clearly, or they didn't see this. So they're thinking, and I'm thinking. And so, yeah, it's a matter of theology. It has no practical import. That's the end of it. If there is something, because again, the Rambam does paskin theology. Most famously what? What's an example of his psakim when it comes to theology? 13 principles of faith. Right? So he lists that if you don't believe these things, you don't get a share in the world to come. So the Rambam clearly, you know, paskens some things in Hashgafa. So what the Rambam said, okay, look, these beliefs are practical. I need to believe these things in order to get Olam Haba. You just have to do that. If you don't believe these things, then you don't get a chalik in the next world. But if it's, you know, whether the Sota dies or not, if she learned or supported Torah, like the Rambam says, like that's not a fundamental tenet of our faith. So okay, so I don't have to. One other thing, which Rabbi Wiederblank points out, and that is that the Rambam doesn't say that it's impossible, it's that we don't have to. Meaning the Rambam felt it was his responsibility to paskin everything in Shas. So the Rambam tries to paskin everything in Shas to the best of his ability. And there are times where the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim dismisses minority opinions in Hashkafa. He says, like, yeah, this guy says this, but I don't care. This guy says this, but we don't believe in it. And so what Rabbi Wiederblank explained is that it's not that the Rambam thought it was fundamentally impossible to paskin Hashgafa, it's just that, I don't have to, and I don't have to be bound by other people, but I could still say that this is wrong. I could still say that, look, most people don't believe this, and okay, so this is, I'm just telling you it's wrong, not because my rabbi said it's wrong, I'm telling you because I know it's wrong. Over here, the Rambam is saying that, look, I don't know, and I don't have to know, so I'm just going to say it doesn't matter. You can believe whatever you want to believe. Now, let's just go down to source number 18. Now, I didn't translate this because it's literally the same thing, except with one fundamental difference, one word that's different. So this is in his commentary to Sanhedrin, where there's a debate about whether certain evil people got a share in the world to come. So certain, like the Dor HaMidbar or the Dor HaFlaga, so the Dor HaMabul. So the Rambam says in source number 18, Kfar hiskarnu lecha kama pa'amim. So once again, I've mentioned this to you many times. Shekol machlokes shetia bein chachamim, that any debate between the chachamim, ve'ena tluya b'maisa, and is not contingent on action, ela kvias svara bilvad, but with svara, ein makom lefsak halacha ke'echad mehem, you know, there's no room to decide with any absoluteness. So what's the one word that he changed? He changed one important word, hashgafa, to what?
Svara.
Svara, yeah. Those are very different words. And if you look in the most recent translation of the Rambam, that first time where it says hashgafa, they retranslate it to svara. They thought that was a more accurate translation of the Arabic.
So what does svara mean in English?
What would you say?
Logical
reasoning.
Yeah, reasoning, not theology. Reasoning. So the Rambam differentiates between theology and just me thinking about stuff. And that's really, I think, a better way of breaking it down, because to say the Rambam really does believe that theology is important, right? He wrote a whole book of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. There's like a whole section called Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. There's a whole book called Sefer Hamada of knowledge. Like, he's paskening, this is the reality, and if you don't believe in it, you've got problems. And so the Rambam differentiates between what we would call machshava or hashkafa and what we would call svara. So if it's just something that I'm, you know, thinking about or making up, maybe it's a commentary to a pasuk, or maybe it's, you know, something about philosophy or a non-binding ethical idea. So okay, fine. So the Rambam says that's totally up to you. Like, you know, there's no tradition about it. I'm not forced to paskin. But theology, I do need to paskin. So I might not need to paskin everything in the world, and we'll get to the Chassam Sofer next time. We don't have enough time now. The Chassam Sofer, Bezirkin's going to be giving a series on it later in the winter, Mirat Hashem. So the Chassam Sofer said that there is some psak in Hashgaf, and he talks about the Rambam, about Mashiach. The Rambam says you need to believe in Mashiach, and if you don't, you're a kofar, and yet there are people in the Gemara that say, I don't believe in Mashiach. Like, there were Rabbanim that didn't believe in Mashiach, so what do you do with that? So the Chassam Sofer deals with it, and we'll finish that up next time before we move on to the next topic. But the point that I want to bring out over here is that the Rambam clearly held there was a concept of psak in Agada, but only certain types of Agada. Agada that had very central theology that you needed, that he felt from the sources, you needed to believe in. Because then, that's practical. It's not physical, but it's practical. If it's not practical, if it's just historic curiosity, if it's just, you know, I'm interested in learning Pshat and Chumash, okay, fine. So you can make something up, I can make something up. That's not a formal thing. Beis Din doesn't need a policy about how to read Chumash. Beis Din doesn't need policy to think about history. But Beis Din does need a policy about theology, because theology is a mitzvah.
Yeah, but then how does the Rambam kind of phrase this so I would use Aristotelian logic?
Yeah, so again, I'm not an expert on Rambam. What I would say is that certain things, the Rambam clearly says, like, I would accept this, but Chazal don't, so I have to throw it out. So there are certain things that he just defers to Chazal, you know, for example, the prime mover theory or something like that. There are other things where the Torah is silent. Like the Torah, even though the Torah says you have to believe that God is one, and you have to believe that God is the ultimate source of everything, it doesn't really say much after that. And so if you look in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, the Rambam says, look, here are some beliefs that, like, I can point to Psukim about, and if you don't believe them, you're a kofar. But there are other things that the Rambam includes there, not because he could point to Chumash, but because, look, this is my philosophy that I think is correct. So that would be more Svara. So I don't have to accept the Rambam in that, now that we know that, you know, the planets don't orbit the Earth. The Rambam's not pointing to a pasuk in that. The Rambam's not saying this is theology. The Rambam's just saying, look, there's a mitzvah to know God. I'm going to tell you about the God that I know. So that's I would say, the Svara part. You're right, it's a good question, and I think you have to differentiate, even in the Rambam's own works, between what he would call Svara and what he would call Hashkafa, or what he would call theology. I don't think there's another way around it. I guess we'll hold here for today. I do want to do the Chsam Sofer. It shouldn't take very long next time. After that, we finish the sugya about Psak in Hashkafa. Before we move on in the Gemara in Horius, I want to talk about that case about Aguna, and how we're matir with only one aid, and why we need a Beis Din for that, that has relevance even Bizman Hazeh. I think there's a tshuva of the Nod Bihuda about that, and so to understand the mechanics of allowing a woman to remarry after her husband disappears. In terms of the schedule, I'm going on vacation. So the question is, unfortunately there's a Shiva, and someone passed away. I don't know if you got the email that was sent out a few hours ago. So someone passed away. I'm not sure about the Shiva details. I'm not sure how much I'll be needed in the beginning of next week. I'm going on a bike marathon on Wednesday and Tuesday night, so I'm not sure exactly when I'm leaving. If I'm here on Tuesday, I would like to have shir. It'll be my way to prep for, you know, you have like a pasta party before a bike, so you can also learn before the bike. You could beef up the brain. So I would like to, if I'm here on Tuesday, I would like to learn. If not, then we'll reconvene when I come back. But I will certainly keep you posted as soon as I know. Have a wonderful week.
You too.